Welcome to MGO Podcast 12.21, this time with sports. Guess what we've got this week?
Sports.
Not Ace. Ace is on the DL, but we've got sports.
Sports.
And we've got Dave Nasternak. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing well. And snow. We have a lot of snow.
Well, there's going to be more by the time this podcast comes out. Yes. So get your ski pants on and shoe snows. It's been a long time.
I already shoveled my driveway this morning, and it's already white again. I'm getting a little upset.
I feel like I've shoveled every other day for like 10 days.
We used to pay someone to shovel it, and he like ran over my grass, and it was like the only time they had to shovel last year, so I fired him. So every single snowfall, my wife just makes fun of me for firing the snow shovel.
Can't you just do it yourself? Get some exercise?
It's quite a lot of exercise. I have a long driveway.
Long driveways.
God forbid, lots of exercise.
Anyway, this is the MGO podcast. We are talking in the immediate aftermath of an 8-point win at the Troll Center, coming off a 22-day layoff due to a COVID B117 strain that no one on the basketball team actually had. Michigan goes down. And speaking of going down, let's go down to Sponsor Town.
Very good segue. We want to thank Underground Printing for making this all possible. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the very beginning. They're also behind our Ann Arbor Institutions t-shirt program. They have awesome custom tees and hoodies at low affordable prices. They have tons of great Michigan apparel you can wear proudly to support the maize and blue. Check out UGP's holiday gift guide at ugp.io/holiday-gift-guide. Use the promo code New Year for 25% off. Our associate sponsors are also the key. Home Sure Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, the Residence in Ann Arbor Downtown, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Information Entropy, and introducing the Raw Power App for iOS by Gentleman Coders.
All right, so Michigan goes down 14 late in the second half. Isaiah Livers gets a long two late in the first half. Thank you. Isaiah Livers gets a long two to bring it within 12. They go into the locker room at halftime. And Juwan gives him the old "we've got him right where we want him" speech.
would that work on you?
No. I mean, this is why I would not be good at team sports. I'd just be like, that's stupid.
You're so full of it, coach.
Right. So this is why I'm a blogger, and that other people are on doing team sports much better than I possibly ever could.
I feel like Juwan could get to me. That, like, sure. You know, there's not many coaches. Like, I don't think I would respond well to Bo Schembechler, but I think Juwan would do it.
Yeah, he gets you.
Yeah.
But anyway, they come out, they win the second half 40-20. It wasn't quite as bad as that run from the first game, but neither did that feel at all fluky. The kind of shots that they were getting, Wisconsin, were mostly bad. And Michigan, I wouldn't say that they were back to their pre-pandemic self in terms of getting to the bucket and just getting great shot after great shot in every possession, but they improved enough to be able to not only catch up but pull away right at the end. For I don't know if that's the most impressive win of the year, but that's only because Michigan has annihilated most of the teams they've played. Like, in a normal year, that would be far and away like your number one win on the road against Wisconsin, which is, you know, they're 9-6 in conference, but they're 12th in KenPom, right? They're a very good team. And to fall down like that and catch up is, I mean, see that very often.
Like what you said, the Big Ten is super tight and Michigan's just double digiting everyone.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you?
It does. And so, and the standout in this game is Isaiah Livers. That's his third straight KenPom MVP performance. And he's doing it with his usual level of usage. Like, he's not going to 25 or 30. He's sticking at 20. And if you look at his shooting since doubling Hunter Dickinson became the thing that everybody does, he's shooting approximately 50% from three. And this game, you know, he has a couple of offensive rebounds off of misses. He has a couple of post-ups. Like, he's able to get to the line, and he misses the front end of a one-on-one, which felt like doom.
Right. it was like the
terrible.
Yeah. Well, there's so many like little moments that I was like ready to just, you know, like the when they got technical foul and Aleem Ford was making all these stupid shots, and like every one of them I was ready to curse. And when Livers misses that front end, I'm like, oh no, that's what's going to be. That's what we're going to like point at for why Michigan didn't come back and win this.
But that was too. That was really his only misstep of the entire game, aside from missing a few shots. So he puts up 20 shots on 17 shot equivalents in a game that was extremely difficult to find good looks. And he essentially carries Michigan through the first half. Like, they're down 12 at the half, and without Isaiah Livers, that's 20 or more.
Yeah, I think he had over half of their points in the first half, or just about.
And that first half did feel very layoff-y. Like, I was, you know, very frustrated, but also trying to keep in mind that this was inevitably what was going to happen. So you've got Eli Brooks taking a bunch of weird shots. You have an inability to get it to Hunter Dickinson in the post. You know, you just have this section of the game where it feels like Michigan doesn't have that flowing offense they've had most of the year, where shots are coming out of the offense, and instead you're having shots come in a lot of isolation situations. You have sets that just kind of end in the mid post and bad shooting possessions that end up in kickouts to the 3-point line that are covered. And then you're in a late clock ISO situation, which is not Michigan's specialty. And it just, Michigan was fortunate that Wisconsin kind of came out. They shot well, but they turned the ball over a bunch, and Michigan was just kind of able to keep in contact until a run at the end of the first half. But it felt unlike any other basketball game this year, except I guess Oakland.
Right, and Oakland was a game we were all ready to write off, but like the way that it was falling apart felt very COVID 3-week layoff, right? Like you were saying, like they'll get the ball down low and then like pivot three times or not know where to go with it, which is, you know, it looked like the very beginning of the season kind of thing, or those games we used to play against some nobody to start the season. And to see them actually looking like an offense again in the second half, really, you know, that was the moment I was like, okay, now do they have enough time, right? Like, I think they just need,
yeah.
That was just, okay, now the rust is gone, not, oh no, it's going to take us weeks to get through.
It kind of reminded me of, there was an Ohio State game, I think in the Trey Burke era, and Michigan was down 20 at the start of the start of the second half, and they just kept clawing back a point here, a point there, and it was just like, do they have enough time? The answer was no. I think they lost by two. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there wasn't that like run until right at the end. But Michigan would just kept clawing closer and closer throughout the whole second half.
Well, the interesting thing. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, and the second half, the defense came around too, and that was the other thing that was a little disjointed. Like, they were losing shooters at the perimeter, and they were making some bad fouls. Like, those fouls that I hate, where you, like, you know, high five the guy after he shoots, and then he gets three shots. Or one time they just lucked out that he was stepping on the line; otherwise, that would have been three shots as well. And then like they cleaned those up, and the only guy who was really scoring for Wisconsin in the second half, I think, it was Jonathan Davis.
Yeah.
The thing that I thought made the whole thing plausible was, and I was talking to Craig about this a little bit, and he's like, you know, they're not turning the ball over. They're just taking a few bad shots. And so it's not like the offense was, okay, you got not the end results you wanted, but it wasn't like everyone wasn't on the same page, so to speak. And so if you clean up some of those shots and you look at, all right, do I need to be taking this at this particular time, or do I need to reset or move the ball? Like, and then you, all of a sudden you get a little better shot and they go in, like, you can then make those runs like you're talking about, you know, and, you know, like you said that Wisconsin turned the ball over early, and that was a big kind of part of Michigan's beginning part of the game, but Michigan, you know, held on the ball. They only had six turnovers the whole game, which, I mean, in Wisconsin is pretty good.
Yeah. This was a couple of defenses that don't force a lot of turnovers, so it's always likely to be pretty clean, but Michigan has played teams that don't force a lot of turnovers and coughed it up, you know, 14 times. And if they did it in this game, that was going to be game over. Then on the defensive side of the ball, you know, the most interesting development is that Michigan decided to switch a lot of screens late And Wisconsin, you know, they run the clock down almost every possession. So a lot of possessions ended up with those late switches. So you have Hunter Dickinson on Demetric Trice. And, you know, Trice hits a couple of like X level hooks. Mm-hmm. And then he slops up some garbage in the second half. And he made one other bucket, like, which it was like, and that was a pull up on a short clock situation. So, you know, he got to the line a little bit, but none of that was against Dickinson. So we talked about this with Matt D in Slack, that this was kind of the Hunter Dickinson, I can play defense at an NBA level game, that there's a caveat there, right? Because he's going up against Demetric Trice, and Trice isn't super athletic. He's not a jumper. He's not a guy who draws a lot of fouls. And he's also not a guy who gets to the rim much as part of his game. So only 15% of his shots are at the rim. So this was, I mean, to me, Hunter Dickinson did prove some things in this game that he hadn't proven in previous games. But this looks like, you know, a coaching move almost on par with when they decided to put Franz on Pete Nance against Northwestern. Mm-hmm. Unconventional, but the ability to see it and see it work is really encouraging about just the overall basketball IQ of the staff, because it's not like something that I expected. And I didn't expect that it would work. The first time it happened, I was like, oh no, don't do that. And then all of Trice's makes were circus shots. And so they also, as part of that, got to close out on the Wisconsin bigs a lot better. So they get up 7 threes in this game. They make two of them. And like one of them is a make over a pretty late Austin Davis contest. So, you know, Potter hits a couple of shots, but those are like face up 15 footers that you're just going to give anybody.
Right.
And then they hit one of their other seven shots from two. So a comprehensive tactical victory against Wisconsin centers and point guards. And those are the most important players on their offense. And that came from the coaching.
Were you at all a little nervous with the extended run that Austin Davis was getting in the first half?
Yeah. I mean, so he gets, there's like, well, actually, that's Potter's other bucket. Potter's other bucket was roasting Davis on a pump fake and go, which easily could have been an and one, was not.
Yeah.
And like there were a couple closeouts that were at issue. And then so you're wondering, all right, Dickinson's coming off a layoff. He's 7'1", he's 260 pounds. Obviously, he's probably not going to be able to go 35 minutes in this game. But how can we afford to have Austin Davis out there for a long period of time? And then, you know, in the second half, like, he had no problems. Like, he's able to wall up against a Reavers attempt. He's closing out fairly decently. I think he gets switched on to maybe Trice. He got switched onto a guard and was able to force that guard to pass it in a late clock situation. And then I think Davis went and got a bucket against Franz. But his shift in the second half was extremely important, because you need to give Hunter Dickinson that rest. And he's 3 or 4 from the floor, right? So he's not just out there. He's producing offensively. They're dumping it down to him. Draws a couple fouls, gets an offensive rebound. And this is not an Austin Davis game, right?
Right, right.
Purdue is an
Austin team is supposed
Davis
to play five out.
Right. This was not a game for him, and he still put in 13 minutes that were winning minutes for Michigan overall.
I got to give Juwan credit here, because we were already complaining in Slack, like, about those moments when they call a defensive timeout, like, okay, we need to get reorganized on defense, and then Austin Davis is still in after that, and like that irked. And then the second time they did that, we start whining about it, and that's when all of a sudden Davis, like, you know, all of a sudden turns it on. He was great on both ends of the floor.
Well, he shaved his beard, so he's much lighter now.
That's true.
Well, but he can move around a lot better.
He's got so much more hair up top, though.
Well, that's true. We're going to have to get him to like go like full American History X here. Maybe not full.
Maybe.
No. Well, and Dickinson grew a full beard, too, which is
true.
Yeah. Another bad sign for his NBA potential.
Speaking of Dickinson, so he had some struggles on offense here. So he goes 3-8 from two, and like there are a couple of instances in the second half where he gets an entry pass and then just hurries.
Yeah. So
he's not in a position where he should go up immediately, and he still does. And to me, I like it still kind of feels like, so he's had some issues with college level doubles. He hasn't been able to work on it in the past 3 weeks very much. And so it kind of feels like, okay, he doesn't want to turn the ball over and he needs to get it up. And that's affecting his efficiency a little bit. Now, he had a couple of good looks at this game that just didn't go down. So, like, you know, I think in most games, he's going to be shooting a little bit more efficiently if he gets those kind of looks, but that kind of did stand out to me as kind of a minor issue.
He also had some go-go gadget rebounds, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this was like this is the first time like we really saw like the 7'1" guy on the boards.
Well, he had 5 offensive rebounds, and 2 of them were on back-to-back possessions late, where he sets up the Livers 3 that puts Michigan ahead, and then he gets a putback on the next possession that was a Kobe assist from Eli Brooks.
Which was a pass, wasn't it? I mean,
no,
it doesn't go down as a pass, but like the thought process is a pass.
Well, yeah, I mean, there when you're drawing that much attention, you put it up there and it goes down. I was watching a Purdue game and they had a replay of an offensive rebound that Trevion Williams put down. And I think Mason Gillis, is that his name? Mason Gillis is camped out in the paint, and he's in great offensive rebounding position, and he is yelling at Trevion Williams to put it up. Like, he's like, shoot it. And Trevion shoots it, misses it, and then Gillis gets a putback. So I think that's a real thing.
Yeah.
But I just went over the rebound on the Livers 3, and it's one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. Like, it looks like Nate Reavers is boxing Hunter Dickinson in. I've never seen a box in from outside the restricted circle, and like the shot is coming from the right of the basket, and those guys are set up on the right, so it's probably going to carry him to the other side. That's usually what happens, and he's just in the worst possible position for an offensive rebound, and he's trying to box out. Something is wrong with Nate Reavers. Something is wrong with his head, and you can like their centers had 0 rebounds this game,
and they started 0. Reavers too.
I mean, Potter wasn't much better. I guess he was better defensively than he usually is. Like, Potter actually swatted a couple of Dickinson shots, and I was like, that came out of nowhere.
Yeah, Potter feels like a problem sometimes. Not all the time, but Potter feels like, okay, if he gets his shot going, or okay, if he's going to play defense like that. He's a great help defender. And Reavers was supposed to be that, and Reavers just, I don't understand why they're playing him more than Potter. Like, at this point, I would just put Potter in as your number one guy and let Reavers, you know, sub him sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, Reavers' stats in the Big Ten are, so he's got 24% usage, which is like big dog usage. He's shooting 49% from 2, and he's 5 of 30 from 3. He's shooting 17% from 3 in Big Ten play. And last year, he's at 36%. So that whole 5-out stuff just isn't flying this year, because Potter's at 28% too. So, low numbers are always kind of an issue for shooting here. But the collapse from both of those guys is what's turned Wisconsin from the Big Ten champ, which they were last year, to a 9-6 team.
Yeah, sure. I mean, nothing else has changed on the team exactly, but I feel like Potter has the ability to you know, come out and kill you one night. Like, that guy's got some 3-for-5 or, you know, 6-for-8 nights from 3 if you're not guarding him out there. And Reavers just doesn't seem like he's dialed in at all. Like, I'm not worried when he gets the ball outside anymore.
He was supposed to be the like defensive counterpart. Like, his block rate's down. It's just, I mean, and the other thing that they can't do, because neither of these guys is shooting, is they can't play them together, right? Like, right. If either of these guys is hitting 35% from 3, you can put them both on the floor at the same time. Potter's able to stick with 4s probably, and you have more rebounding, you have more length, but they just haven't been able to play together because they can't hit shots.
Right.
So that's where Wisconsin is.
Well, that was the reason we thought they were going to be Big Ten champions. We figured that would be their lineup, that they're going to be 5-out, that they're going to be unstoppable because they've got 2 5-out centers playing at the same time. And instead, they're just, you know, more and more minutes with Tyler Wahl, who's never going to be more than, you know, kind of a junker.
And then Brad Davison, now shooting 21% from 2 in Big Ten play. Because instead of making his sole attempt from 2 in this game, he decided to elbow Mike Smith's face off.
They give him the benefit of the doubt. Brad Davison.
And they're like, this guy probably was making a basketball move.
And then that's the play where Michigan gets a technical foul on top, right?
Yes, because Juwan Howard is like, hey, he got elbowed in the face. And they're like, that's impolite, technical foul.
And then he had another play where he was fumbling the ball near midcourt and totally like sealed off a guy when they were going for the rebound and grabbed it and then slid about 5 feet on top of it. And there was no call. And that was sort of like the point in the first half where, you know, I'm not the biggest like ref yeller that there is, but I was like, okay, well, this is some peak troll center stuff, because like, not only did you see the, well, maybe the elbow was later, but you know, he just walls off a guy and then goes flying across the court and there's no travel. And it was just, well, this is the Brad Davison experience.
Yeah, there was like a blocking call on Brooks that was just completely baffling.
Yeah.
Like he gets plowed in the chest by Ford and they're like, block. And I'm like, what?
Is that the word you used?
Yes. That's literally what I said. I said, what?
I mean, that was the typical Troll Center stuff. Like, I hate Wisconsin's. They've got this thing they do when they're obviously going to lose a rebound where they've been boxed out, and so they just jump for the rebound late and land right below where you're coming down. And Davison was at fault for that a couple times. Wall was doing that a few times, and those are the plays where I'm just I wish they could just take that out of the game.
Yeah, we should probably talk about Franz a bit too, because Franz had 4 makes from 2 in this game, and all of them had a relatively high degree of difficulty. There are these swooping layups that aren't quite in the lane all the time, and he's able to like make some chicken salad out of some difficult situations. Because Wisconsin's defense is positionally immaculate. Like Michigan only gets to the rack 9 times in this game versus I think it was 23 in the first game. So they improved a great deal, and also I think a lot of that is COVID layoff for Michigan. But so Franz is able to like have an efficient game. He's 4-7 from 2, he's 2-4 from 3, and one of his misses from 3 was that extremely inadvisable step back heat check.
No.
Which was just like, what are we doing? He also has a block and a steal, which is I think the 5th straight game he's had at least 1 block and 1 steal. So that disruption that he brings is a constant. And he's out there for 38 minutes. So he barely leaves the court, which could be a problem if Michigan gets a whole run of games here coming up. But, I mean, he's 6th in the Big Ten in O rating now, and he's also one of the most disruptive defenders in the league.
He canned a Shaq free throw too, right? Like that line drive sort of shot that, like you were talking about a hook, but it was from in the lane. And I mean, the ball couldn't have gone more than a foot above the rim. He just kind of like launched it, and it was at like a perfectly parallel angle. Yeah.
Well, when he attacks the rim, I mean, that's what makes him so effective when he's as a driver, is that when he attacks the rim, his shot's coming from so high that, like, unless you have, like, a center, like, at the peak of his motion, you're not going to be able to get above him. So, like, those shots are not, you know, you're used to, like, a guard coming in and, like, having the ball have to go so far up, but that ball's already above the rim when he's releasing it.
Yeah. So I talked about this in the game column, you know, other than Brooks having kind of a nightmare in terms of decision-making on offense, he was great on defense too. Like you look at this lineup 1 through 5 and, you know, who's the 5th guy? You don't really know. Who's the 4th guy? You don't know. So who's the 1st guy? Well, it was Hunter Dickinson. Now it feels like it's Isaiah Livers, right? So,
right. Well, you made the comment about the Isaiah Livers of the Year award in the Big Ten, and I immediately was like, well, Eli Brooks should get that award.
Yeah, that's, I mean, he will be a strong contender. So 14-1, 9-1 in the league, and to be able to come back from this deficit coming off that layoff at that arena, I mean, it says volumes, but so do a ton of other games Michigan has played this year. So keep on keeping on. Got Rutgers on Thursday, got Ohio State for a 1-seed play-in game. Is that a fair assessment?
1-seed in multiple tournaments.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to even guess what the schedule is going to be because I keep on waiting for them to announce that they're going to end up playing, you know, every night or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's going to be some shuffling around here. But so they have 6 days off between Ohio State and Indiana, so you're going to get at least 1 game in there, maybe 2. And then they've got a Saturday-Thursday split between Indiana and Iowa, so I think you're probably going to see something stuck in on the Tuesday there. And I wouldn't be surprised if they had a back-to-back with Michigan State to kind of finish out the season.
That'd be fun.
Yes, it would.
It'd be nice if we could go back to December and play a few games in that ridiculous.
The 12th.
When they were off for 2 weeks.
We only played on Christmas and New Year's. And the players were off. It wasn't like they were taking finals at that time. They were, you know, on break.
Yeah, I don't know. And just, it feels crazy that they haven't pushed the tournament back at least a week, right? Because there's so many teams I need to make up games. I just don't know why you wouldn't.
Somebody told me that it's because of the hotels, that they book so many hotel rooms, and like getting that money back. I don't know why they think hotel rooms are so expensive, because, you know, hotels are not exactly filled to the brim right now. Yeah. But yeah, apparently there's some sort of cancellation problem with that, where they found it too expensive. So better to, you know, have all these amateur athletes play games every other day than you know, cancel hotel rooms.
Well, that is definitely an is what it is kind of thing. But
now I'm kind of hoping that's the reason. Well, we couldn't do it. We had too many hotels booked. Oh.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back and talk about, what are we going to talk about? Was it? We'll figure it out.
Sports! 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 2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing is three convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to... Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them. You should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/MGOBlog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the Big House and accessible to ages 21+, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
We were going to talk about what was happening in the Big Ten or around the Big Ten segment. So Michigan is currently 9-1. Illinois is trailing them by, well, it's hard to tell right now. I guess it's a game and a half in the standings right now.
Are we doing it by percentages? Are we going to play these games? Like,
I don't know. But Illinois' most recent game was a overtime victory over Nebraska, in which Io Dosunmu was like the only Illinois player to score in the last 10 minutes of the game. I think almost literally. So, I mean, Illinois is obviously a very good basketball team, but man, their game to game is they're much more up and down than a Michigan is, right? Like, you know, they lost to Maryland, they went to OT with Indiana, and then they, you know, they hammer Wisconsin, they beat Iowa.
Their fans were mad this week that Michigan like canceled the game with them instead of playing them on one day of practice after like 2 weeks off of for COVID. And I was like,
yeah, I mean,
even like the rational ones. I follow some good Illinois people, and they were like watching the beginning of the Michigan Wisconsin game. They're like, you know, you can see why Michigan kind of wanted to duck Illinois, huh? And I was like, dudes. What?
That would be the best time to play Michigan. Come on. The only thing that's going to stop them, apparently.
I don't know. Do you think Illinois wanted their performance against Nebraska to count against Michigan?
That's a good point. I mean, they're an interesting team that has some issues.
Craig just doesn't stop screaming, he can't go left, he can't go left, every time Dasunmu has the ball.
Yeah, and I think that's a potential Achilles heel against Michigan, because Michigan has a couple of guys who are hopefully going to be able to force him into the kind of shots that he doesn't want to take. Now, the other notable development over the past week was Ohio State continuing its reign of terror. I mean, they didn't play anyone super good. They played Maryland and Indiana, but they handled Indiana. And that one was a strange one to me, because they handle Indiana. Trace Jackson Davis does what Trace Jackson Davis should do against the undersized Ohio State bigs, but it just doesn't matter because nobody else on Indiana does anything. They get 10 makes from two from Trace Jackson Davis and six from the rest of the team.
Well, they can't shoot outside, so everything's compressed on that team, and you can't play Ohio State if you're going to be compressed into the paint. Even though Ohio State doesn't have, like, you know, a dominant center, they have, like, a lot of kind of long guys who are really good help defenders, and they crush you if you try to kind of stay in there. You kind of have to spread those guys out more.
Yeah, I'm increasingly fascinated by Christian Lander, who's, of course, the five-star that Michigan was kind of in on for a while, and then he decides to reclassify, move up. He was getting like 4 minutes a game for much of the Big Ten season. The last five games, he's gotten 10-plus minutes in all those games. He has zero makes from two in that time.
And he's one of nine from three in that time, too.
Yeah, he has 11 assists. He's 11 assists and nine turnovers. He's just not ready at this level yet. His O rating in Big Ten play, 72. That is incredible. His O rating in tier A plus B games, which are top 100 equivalent, is 59. He is one of 14 from two on the season. And he's out there for 17 minutes in this game. 17 minutes!
Well, he's taken away from Rob Finnessy, too, who's actually kind of looked like a much better player in the last few weeks.
Well, yeah, and they have this Leal kid who's just a shooter, but at least he can shoot a little bit. Like, I mean, I know he's not a point guard and he needs something resembling a backup point guard, but geez.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean, his usage has creeped above 20, so he is technically eligible for Disaster Factory of the Year. A sleeper. I mean, we got some contenders this year, but...
The Northwestern guy is really making a run now. I thought it was going to be...
Oh, Chase Audish?
Yeah. He's been really kind of... Because Northwestern kind of... They were trying to be that five-out team, and then as soon as Michigan solved that, like, Audish just doing crazy things is basically where some of their offense has to come from, and he's got the talent to do it. He just... He just thinks he's got a lot more than he's got.
Well, his numbers aren't terrible. Like, he's shooting 45% from two, 34% from three on high usage. And his turnover rate isn't terrible either, but it does add up to a 90 O rating.
His turnover rate is not terrible because he puts the ball up as soon as there's somebody near him. So it's that's not a, like, okay, I know how to protect the ball. They don't count turnovers if you just launch the ball at the basket.
The thing about Audish is the things he tries are audacious, and when he fails, it's hilarious. It's him and Booth Gatch are really, they really bring the flair.
Yeah.
It's truly impressive, some of the things that he fails to do.
Well, Audish had an opportunity because he was getting some like good step back threes, like, which is not something that's really been part of his game before. Yeah. In that crazy game that went to double overtime, which was like the closest chance Northwestern's had to like actually getting a Big Ten win since this whole slide started, and he missed his last two shots, which were both, you know, okay, this is going to be it. Okay, this is going to be it. And I kind of felt bad for him at that point because, like, this guy's trying to carry his team. And, like, that would have been the redemption moment. That would have been, like, the, okay, Chase, you've done it. You now are the leader of your team. And clang.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's how it is. Meanwhile, the week's most entertaining score, Iowa 88, Michigan State 58. Luka Garza gets held to 8 points in this game, and Michigan State loses by 30. So Michigan State doubles the hell out of Luka Garza, and Iowa repays them by shooting 52% from three on 25 attempts. And that'll do.
I was about to say, how did they lose so bad? Like, they didn't really turn it over.
Well, they shot 39% from two and 29% from three, and that'll do it.
So they're just a terrible, terrible shooting team, or did they just have a bad night?
Well, no, I mean, they just can't get anywhere near the bucket ever. Like, we play like the guess how many times Michigan State got to the bucket in this game. We're gonna do it. We're gonna do it again. How many shots at the rim did Michigan State have in this game?
I hit the under last time. I'm going to try over this time because it's Iowa. 10.
19, actually. So
okay. This one was, okay.
That's surprising.
And they still didn't make any of them?
I mean, well, they hit Iowa.
They hit 10 of 19. So it's Iowa is the correct answer. Also, 10 of 19 at the rim sucks. So,
That's not good.
No, it's not.
I mean, are you including garbage time? Because like most of this game was garbage time.
I am including garbage time because the Torvik box score doesn't separate it out.
Okay.
But most of this game was garbage.
But hey, at least they get everybody back next year, right?
If they were going to run off one of their centers, they can no longer because their 2022 five-star center recruit just said, see ya. There's too many centers on this roster. Like, he's going to come in and he's going to be like, whoa, I'm stuck behind Thomas Kithier.
I mean, maybe this is good for them because, like, he was going to come in and not be ready. And now, like, it's going to force them to play Marcus Bingham, who at least is effective as a defender.
Like, I don't know if that's really a great, I don't know. Like, Bingham has had his moments, but, like, I don't necessarily think that they're much better with him on the floor, right? He doesn't have much usage. He doesn't really do anything on the offensive boards. Like, his block rate's good, but he's so spindly that you can really bully him under the basket. I don't think he's a solution this year or next. And then
I'm not talking about a solution. I mean, he is I moderately better than another bad option, I would say.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is amazing to play Iowa and Luka Garza puts up 8 points and you get blitzed by 30. That is like chef's kiss work right there.
Well, that his backup's pretty solid, isn't he? Like that Nunge guy?
Yeah, he's actually the KenPom MVP of this game. He went 6-9 from two, hit some free throws, 6 assists, no turnovers. So they're...
I mean, Nunge has been on a tear anyway. Nunge has been coming out, yeah.
Iowa centers combined for 9 assists and 1 turnover. So that's when your doubling didn't work. Just a terrible, terrible basketball team. And I don't know if they have much in the way of prospects for getting better next year. I mean, because everyone expects Rocket Watts is going to transfer. Uh-huh. The recruiting class is currently Imani Bates, who's not coming.
Right.
Imani Bates is the year after. That's wrong. So they have.
Yeah, I was about to say. I think that's.
That's right. They actually have a couple of guys. Like, I've seen Akins play, he can play. And then Max Christie is like a top 20 kid. So I take that back. They have a path to improvement next year.
I mean, Akins can play, but is he going to be a Big Ten point guard next year?
I honestly think that that's a possibility.
Okay.
Like, I saw him, he's playing for Sunrise Christian now. So they played either Montverde or IMG. And I watched that game and I was impressed with him. I was impressed with not only his shooting, but his ability to command the floor, especially in a high school game. That's impressive. So I think he's going to be a player and they're just going to stick him right in the starting lineup.
But will he be better than a fourth year Foster Lawyer?
Another candidate for Disaster Factory of the Year is Rocket Watts, who's shooting 29-27.
Rocket. I thought that guy was going to be a breakout player of the year in the Big Ten. I'm eating that one hard.
A lot of people did. Like, he shot pretty well, especially down the stretch last year. And so you're like, okay, he's settling in. He's a freshman who improved a great deal. He's a highly touted recruit. This is going to be a breakout season for him. And nope.
I I mean, his defense is way worse than anyone pictured, and it's not a talent problem. He just has no clue what he's doing out there.
Meanwhile, Weird Maryland beats Minnesota by 13 to get to 11-10 and 5-9. They've got Nebraska on a back-to-back in a couple of days.
Who's excited for that? Get to play Nebraska 2 days in a row.
I mean, Nebraska's coming, man. Nebraska just beat Penn State. Like they are not just Nebraska ball at the moment. They are not
coming. they are staying. That's what they.
We didn't really specify where they would be going, so they could be.
They're not going. They're staying. Okay. That's what's happening.
They took Illinois to overtime and they beat Penn State in their last two games. This is a level of Nebraska ball that could definitely beat Michigan State.
So if you look at Maryland's season, so they haven't really done a whole lot to say that they're not a mediocre team, but all their losses are like versus Michigan or Indiana or, you know, Penn State. At Penn State is their worst loss of the year, and Penn State is like the number 37 team in the country in KenPom. So they have really held their own against their schedule. Like they beat Minnesota, they beat Purdue. They actually have a season sweep of Minnesota. They beat Illinois, they beat Wisconsin. So they have some wins. And KenPom projects them to finish 15-12 and 9-11 in the Big Ten. So they're 5-9 right now. So it projects they're going to lose two more games. And that might get them in, honestly.
They'd be a fascinating team in the because like they're just an all wings team, right? So like you can just and those teams, when you get them in the tournament, like they can knock out smaller teams. They can, you know, go on a shooting tear and knock off a big team. Like those teams are always really fun in the tournament.
So Maryland is currently first four out on Bracket Matrix, and they're the last team in the tournament in Bart Torvik's T-Rankatology. So they're right on the cut line right now. And
well, their schedule for the rest of the Big Ten is Nebraska, Rutgers, that's a tough one, Michigan State, Northwestern, Penn State. So they could potentially finish that schedule with, you know, one or two losses, and that might be enough.
If they hit 500 in Big Ten play, they're in. There's no question. Because they'll have the wins. There's an extra at-large bid because there's no Ivy this year. But can you imagine how angry Maryland fans are going to be if they're in the first four?
Well, then you have to extend Turgeon, right?
Right. They're like, finally we can get rid of this guy, and then he's gonna make the tournament. And
what does Ira think of Turgeon?
Ira thinks Turgeon is possibly a worse human than anyone who's walked the earth in history. I think that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but he's not really a fan.
I know. Does he have a lot of fans?
He has a wife. They're probably.
I think there's a general sentiment among like the intelligentsia around the Big Ten that Turgeon is not as bad as people think, but that is like the intelligentsia who think Jim Harbaugh is, you know, a much better coach than people are giving him credit for, which is true. And also like,
he couldn't put together a roster that made any sense this year. And that is a major strike against him. Speaking of teams who will be furious to see themselves get in the tournament, Indiana is also last four in T-Rankatology. And they have a season sweep of Iowa. They're headed for 8-10 in Big Ten play if they don't get rescheduled games, according to KenPom. And I just can't imagine this team getting in, but they've got a shot. They have a real shot.
I mean, you don't want to see Trace Jackson Davis's season end in the regular season. Like that guy, that's another team that's fun to watch because they've got, you know, one dude.
He is a dude, and they have nothing. I guess Armin Franklin's a decent shooter to surround him with, but like they just they don't have a point guard.
For a while, though.
What? Like,
they've always had like a sort of an NBA prospect who's kind of held them above where that they really should be, and then they surround him with not a lot. I feel like that's just been going on with Indiana for quite some time.
Well, I mean, so under Archie Miller, Indiana's conference record 9-9, 8-12, 9-11, 6-7.
Yeah.
He's in year four, and like Tom Crean won the league and then had one bad 7-11 year and got fired. And like, I mean, I know that they had some issues once they got to the tournament with Crean's good teams, and he like had some hiccups, right? Like he missed a couple bids, but he had four bids, including a one seed, a four, and a five in his last 6 years at Indiana. And they've had nothing under Miller, anything like that. So,
well, he's not recruiting the way that like either Crean or early Miller was recruiting. Like, I don't think they have any, they're not even close to getting any five stars in the next class.
Well, they've always seemed to get one every year, and then he's there for a year, year and a half, maybe two, and that's it. And then they get the next one, and then the same thing happens.
Well, they just kind of have this in-state base that occasionally throws up a guy who is always going to go to Indiana. And but yeah, you're, I mean, like, they brought in Lander, and Lander was a big get, but he's just not ready for this level yet. And they didn't have, their other three guys didn't crack the top 100 last year, and you know, they're incoming class has one kid in it who's just kind of a, you know, he's a top 100 center who's going to be okay, but like, does that really change your equation if Jackson Davis comes back? And I actually haven't seen Jackson Davis listed in a whole lot of NBA mock drafts, so I expect that they're probably going to be pretty similar next year. And if that's the case, you know, that's probably
wonder what he's going, I mean, what more can you develop with Trace Jackson Davis at Indiana? Like, what is he going to get from coming back versus just, like, you know, is he going to be better for the league in a year from now?
I mean, probably not. Like, he's not going to develop a stretch. But if you look at these mock drafts, like, usually they've got him second round, right? So, you know, maybe we're talking about a guy who just decides it's his time to go. But, and if that happens, they're done. Like, he's a KPOY top 10 guy right now. And you just watch their games, and they have no other ideas except, let's try to get it to Jackson Davis and see what he can do. So, I mean, they'd be going into next year starting Race Thompson at center, probably. They'd be done.
Yeah.
They should have fired him at halftime when Michigan was up 17-0 a couple of years ago.
Honestly, they probably should have. Like,
it would have been so great because that place was so mad. And like that team, they might have come back and won that game with like how excited the fans would have been if they had done that.
No. No.
This never happened.
I mean, the crazy thing is that like Archie had a real run with Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't really get out of the first round for parts of that run, but like, you know, they were probably the best team in the A-10 for a stretch of three straight years at the end of his tenure there. And it's not like he inherited like an awesome team, right? Like they hadn't been to the tournament for a couple years before he came in, and Dayton's always going to be a team that is structurally going to be one of the better teams in that league. But God, I just remembered that they were so awesome last year and there was no tournament.
I was about to say, you didn't even have Obi Toppin.
No, God. Oh my God. That is awful. That is a team that hurts the most for not having a tournament last year is Dayton. Jesus.
All right, we've done Dayton. Is there anyone else in the Big Ten that we need to talk about?
No. Let's take a break. Come back. We have a gimmicky top five.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages approximately $100,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy. His name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he was like, "Yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it."
I also like I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
Passion for e-commerce. Sell stuff online. Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown. All of our best to the MGoBlog family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
Michigan
State, give me your fish tank.
Thank you. Michigan State should have their basketball players wear name tags on the front.
Because I can't tell who anybody is. And like, just having their last name on the back is not enough. You need, like, some sort of, like, you know, name, and then, like, you know, where you're from, something about you, like some sort of icebreaker.
Some conference?
Yeah, I don't know who any of these people are. Like, anytime they got the ball, they need to, like, just reintroduce this guy and be like, this is Thomas Githier, and he's from so-and-so or so-and-so. I don't even know.
Clarkson.
congratulations, you know something about one of these people out on the court for Michigan State. But I don't know who any of these people are. And
I
they
know
played...
lawyers from Clarkson, too. And, okay. Like, Dane Fife is, like, super tight with Clarkson. And so all the RCMB people are furious at Dane Fife for having these guys on the roster.
He was Mr. Basketball over David DeJulius, or DeJulius, as some people know him.
Oh, man. There's a throwback.
Yeah, there is. Dave, I need your hottest take. Wait, no. Dave, what? I need your rawest take.
Now I don't know which one to pick. I think this is going to be a really awesome spring for Michigan athletics, because you have obviously we talked about basketball. The hockey team is playing really well too. Men's tennis is ranked in the top five. Wrestling is ranked in the top five. Baseball is ranked. Softball is always ranked. Even volleyball and women's tennis are all supposed to be very good. So, and the women's basketball team is also very good. So you have probably eight-ish sports that are all going to compete at an extremely high level. And I mean, there's a chance one or more of those could win a national title. And not to mention, like, even in the wrestling group, I've heard that there are multiple like individuals that could win national titles.
I forgot how, like, lukewarm your hot takes are.
I wasn't gonna say it.
I just hate the truth.
That's fine. All right, my rawest take is, if COVID made its basketball season how it is, it's all worth it. I know I've been inside for 11 straight months, but Duke's not going to be in the tourney. Kentucky's not going to be in the tourney. Michigan State is not going to be in the tourney. Michigan is headed for a one seed. Iowa is really good. And we all like Iowa.
Only you like Iowa, Brian.
I like Iowa. You can't stop me from liking Iowa. Loyola Chicago is in the top 10 of the KenPom rankings. Divine intervention is at hand.
they're
talking about an NIT just because, like, Michigan State and Duke and Kentucky can possibly compete in it. Which, no, none of those teams are going to accept an invite to the NIT. But it's really cute that they're talking about it.
This is going to be, like, the first tournament since the 1970s without, like, Duke, Kentucky, and Michigan State in it.
They're going to claim it doesn't count because of that. Like, and Duke's just going to have this year, like, stricken from the record.
I am all about that. I had a take earlier this year that Michigan State was going to play on the first day in the Big Ten tournament, and that's happening. And if COVID did that, I'm fine. I haven't seen anyone outside my immediate family for 11 months, except briefly or outside. But it's all worth it as long as that tourney streak for Michigan State goes down in a ball of flames.
See, now you're just going to make them win the Big Ten tournament.
No. All right, if you would like us to continue doing this extremely silly segment, check out Raw Power for iOS and Mac. It's an advanced photo editor and manager. Raw Power is written by a Michigan alum. It's great with RAWs and JPEGs, works with your Apple library, and adds editing features no other app has. Check it out at rawpower.app. Our gimmicky top five is... What is our gimmicky top five? God.
We're giving advice to people.
Oh, yes. We have, there's a snowstorm that is essentially nationwide. Texas is freezing. I saw someone from Texas A&M post a video saying blizzard-like conditions.
They lost power in Dallas. My sister, like, they don't have heat or anything. My sister lives in Dallas. It's 7 degrees outside. They're, like, bundled up in all of their clothes. They're on their last log of fire to, like, heat the house, and then it's over.
They're not going to freeze to death.
She's talking about, like, trying to drive through this and come back to Michigan. Come back to Michigan because it's too cold in Texas.
What? Okay.
So the blizzard-like conditions at Texas A&M were like, yeah, there's a couple inches of snow on the ground.
I was about to say.
So we have tips. If you're in the South, you don't know what you're doing, we will guide you through this crisis. Seth, you're number five.
If you can get to an auto parts store, get yourself some Rain-X 2-in-1. That orange stuff, that's the stuff that you need for your washer fluid. All right, throw out all the stuff you've got now because it's not going to help you. It's going to freeze up. You've been using cheap, the wrong washer fluid for the snow. And this is what we all know in the North and you don't know in the South. Get the orange stuff.
Wow, you took this a lot more serious than I did. Dave, you're number five.
It's not the end of the world. It's just snow. So, like, don't overreact to everything. And just, okay, maybe you drive a little slower and you walk a little slower and, you know, you use some caution. But, like, you don't need to, like, cancel life because there is snow on the ground.
They do. They do.
I'm aware. I grew up in Atlanta. It's insane. But then I came here and we got a foot and a half of snow. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm still going to Kroger today.
My number five is taped together baking sheets can be used as a sled. You, a Southerner, probably do not have a sled, but I bet you have some baking sheets. And what you should do with your time now is find the steepest hill possible and go down it in a rickety contraption. Seth, you're number four.
Related to Dave's there, 2 inches is the bare minimum to share on social media.
If there's 1.5 inches, no one cares.
Just take your ruler outside. If it's 1.5 inches, just like, I, you know, go ahead and play, have all the fun you want with it. But if you share it on social media, just be prepared for Midwesterners to make fun of you. Okay.
I'm going to make fun of someone who posts 2 inches of snow.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as it's like, oh, this is a novelty, that's fine. But like, if people are running around and screaming and it looks like a zombie movie, like at the apocalypse moment, like that's, I'm going to criticize you. That's what's going to happen. Dave, you're number four.
Don't listen to the media buzzwords. Oh, my gosh. Snowpocalypse, Snowmageddon, polar vortex, all this stuff.
Polar vortex is a real thing.
Okay, but how is it different than a snowstorm? It's just snow.
I'm going to tell you, a polar vortex is when the jet stream bends low and polar air rushes in, and then it swirls around. So it is a meteorological phenomenon.
So it just gets colder is what you're telling me?
Well, yeah, but there's a reason for it.
Okay, that's fine. But it's I don't know. It, you hear these things and it sounds like something like it's just the end of the world again. And I don't know. We had to go home from our office a few years ago because there was going to be a snowmageddon or something. And then it snowed a little bit. And I think I still went out that night and went to a basketball game or something anyway. So
here.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, so I mean, the issue is like in Atlanta, they had an ice storm and like people were trapped in the school for 3 days. So.
Because the doors froze shut?
No, because they don't have, like, they can't fix any of this stuff in the South. They don't have sand.
It sounds like poor plan.
Salt, apparently. Or
there's no salt?
This almost made my gimmicky top five. You can use kitty litter instead of salt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Don't they have a lot of barbecue? Doesn't that require salt?
I mean, not that much salt. It's just a little bit of salt.
I imagine Texans have a lot of barbecue implements.
Barbecue everywhere.
Like, I heard that they use spatulas, like their barbecue spatulas, to clear off ice because they don't have icebreakers.
Well, my number four is look at it as a bourbon opportunity. This is a cultural sharing moment. Just don't go anywhere. Get out of bourbon. Drink the bourbon. Look at the snow. It's pretty. You'll enjoy it. It's a bourbon opportunity. What isn't a bourbon opportunity, you ask? I don't know.
I was about to say, that sounds like Tuesday for you.
Seth, you're number three.
Not all snow is for snowmen. Okay, that for that, you need packing snow. Packing snow is a little bit wetter. It falls when it's kind of warmer out. And just try it. You take a little bit of snowball and roll it a little bit. If it picks up snow, you got packing snow. That's for making snowmen. If you have powder, which is the other kind of snow, you're not going to make a snowman with it, but you can make snow forts. And you could also throw it at each other. And it's kind of fun for making snow angels and stuff like that. So know your snow and know what you're going in ahead of time before you like show up with a whole bunch of carrots and stuff to make a snowman and find that's just going to come apart on you.
A whole bunch of carrots?
Yeah, how what kind of snowman are we talking about? Dave, you're number three.
Shovel in layers, because it makes it actually possible. Sometimes when you get a lot of snow, the worst thing to do is wait until it's over, and then you walk out and you have a lot of snow. So if you get out ahead of time and, oh, okay, there's a few inches, I can get that off of the sidewalks and the driveway and such. And on top of this, I also want to say, don't drive over your snow and then try to shovel it.
Because that's not possible.
Huh?
Sometimes that's not possible. You're right.
I mean, you could like run. I mean, I've just like shoveled little runners for my tires down the snow. And then you can shovel the driveway, you know, when you get to the end or, you know, whatever. You do that another time. But as soon as you start driving over and over and then you try to, oh, I think I'll shovel now. Well, guess what? You've created A, ice, and B, a good chance to send your shovel into your stomach.
All right. My number three is stop being so smug about holding meat at the same temperature for a long time.
Okay.
Seth, you're number two.
My number two is Dave's number three. Shovel often. A dark driveway soaks up heat and melts the snow. A white one reflects sunlight. So if you get that shoveled and keep it dark, it's going to keep itself nice and clear for you. Also, the runner's trick. Also, I don't know if they're shoveling around you, but if they are they are plowing the street, then you got to get down there and get the end of your driveway, because that's the part where it can really build up and become a problem.
Dave, you're number two.
Help someone out. There's going to be someone somewhere that maybe needs the end of their driveway shoveled, like Seth said, or is, you know, struggling to get through their longer driveway, per se, or something like that. Or maybe someone just doesn't have enough food or whatever. Go be a friend. This is a good chance.
My number two is wander around in flip-flops and shorts. It'll probably be fine. I base this on some people I knew in college from, like, Los Angeles who just did this all winter. And I don't know. They were like, yeah, this is what I do. It's comfortable.
Works so, for Brady Hoke.
It's possible that living in the South, you just have accumulated all this extra heat for years and years and years. And therefore, if some of it leaks out, it's fine. I didn't understand it at the time. I still don't understand it. But flip-flops and shorts are good for people in the South when it's really cold. Seth, you're number one.
This is my big important safety tip. Stop telling people to steer into the skid. Because no one's going to know what that means when you're panicking and you're skidding and your car is out of control for the first time in your life. What they mean by that is like steer in the direction that, you know, the tushy of your car is going. Really, just keep the wheel like faced in the direction of the road, okay? As long as your wheel is going the direction of the road and you're watching the direction of the road, then you'll, you know, stay calm, get control of your car, give it a little gas as soon as you have control again, and get yourself back on track. The worst thing you can do is just, like, start slamming in one direction or the other and slamming on your brakes, because then you're really going to lose control of your car and you start skidding.
Dave, you're number one.
So we've kind of mentioned this a little bit, but enjoy it. It's snow. It's fun. First of all, you said how pretty it is. It is. Take a walk. Look outside. Look and see. Oh, you know what? It is very pretty. But also, there are fun things to do. You can go skiing. You can go sledding. And probably some of the best football games I've ever played in have been in the snow. Get your few of your buddies. Throw the ball. It snowed a few times when I lived in Atlanta. And we got together and tried to play football in the snow. And it was amazing.
My number one is sort of similar to Seth's, although it's a little bit more prescriptive. Don't drive. Don't get in your car. You don't know what you're doing. It's not worth it. You don't have four-wheel drive. Even if you do have four-wheel drive, don't get in your car. Just chill out.
That's
you don't
your
need to go anywhere.
Life.
You don't need to do anything. You just need to chill, and then eventually it'll melt. Just hunker down. Don't go out on the road. You're going to get stuck on the highway. Everybody's going to be frozen. You know, you're going to have to walk to a Walmart or Piggly Wiggly or whatever. Just don't get in a car. It's not worth it. Stop.
You've also
take the bus?
No, they should stay home.
You've had a year practice of staying home. We are all really, really good at staying home now.
Just stay home some more.
Do you think it's worse to be driving in Michigan, where like half the people don't know how to drive and the other half were like, oh, my car is fine with this, and they're going like still 10 over the speed limit? Or in like Texas, where they're all going 20 miles an hour right now?
Texas, because Texas, they're not all going 20 miles an hour right now. There's a bunch of yahoos in like meat helmets doing their thing. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk some hockey.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the Big House and accessible to ages 21+, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Yeah! 2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing has 3 convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to...
She's 20 years of snow falling. She's 20 years of strangers looking into each other's eyes. She's 20 years of clean. She never truly hated anyone or anything.
So hockey splits with Wisconsin. They win 5-1 on Saturday. They lose 3-2 on Sunday. Two very different games. I mean, Cole Caulfield did exactly nothing in the Saturday game, but was the best player on the ice on Sunday. Almost scored like a Mike Camilleri level goal. In Michigan, you know, it felt like they really struggled in the first 15 minutes of the Saturday game. Had a couple of good shifts at the end of the first period and then just kind of took over from there. And, you know, just it really never felt like Michigan had a grip on the Saturday game.
The second game.
We're going to go with that.
Well, yeah. No, the second game was, I think Wisconsin just played better. I don't think that Michigan played poorly per se, but I mean, you got to see kind of what that offense can do. And that's probably the best offense Michigan is going to face. It definitely in the Big Ten and maybe even in the tournament, give or take maybe a North Dakota or BC or something. But, you know, they have, I think, three of the top six leading scorers in the country. And, you know, they just demolished and lit up Minnesota pouring in goals. And I mean, Michigan still held them to four on the weekend. And if you would have told me, all right, Wisconsin gets four goals this weekend, I would say that's pretty good. And I take it and I take our chances scoring goals. And they got a bunch on the first game because we're not sure which day these were played. And the second day they still got two and they had other chances. Not as many, like you alluded to the fact that, you know, they did play pretty well in the first game, but on Sunday, you know, they still got into the slot a number of times. It just wasn't at the same rate and they didn't finish them. And I think that the switch in goalie also made a big difference because Badoon kind of gave them parts of three goals on the first night.
Maybe.
And the second night, Rowe, I thought was pretty good until that Brisson goal that maybe he could have stopped at the end, but he didn't really leave them a whole lot to shoot at.
Yeah. One thing that's kind of leapt out about that series is it really feels like Thomas Bortolo is coming into his own as like Michigan's top line center. The passes he's making, the ability to strip the puck and just create chances all over the ice is something that, you know, I thought we were going to see when I saw him with the national team last year when they played Michigan. I thought he was their best player in that game. But sometimes it takes guys, especially smaller guys, to ramp a little time to ramp up. And I feel like, you know, he's really, really come along and looks like a guy who is going to be in this program for 2 or 3 years. And I can't wait to see him next year because I think he's going to be explosive.
Yeah, he was the engine in the game tying goal in the first game where he kind of stripped the puck of a guy, or the guy kind of fumbled it and he came in. And the what he did is he got really deep on the one side and then sort of left the pass to space, not exactly to a particular player, but across the crease, so that it could just sit there. And actually, you know, Brisson finished it very easily. But if he wasn't there, Mike Pasta was right behind him and was going to score too. So, I mean, that's just an example of like what he can do on the offensive end. And he draws a lot of attention, like you were saying. And is he the best center? Yeah. I mean, Beniers has also been very, very good and he does a lot too.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think that Michigan, you know, I was looking at their statistics and they don't have a best player. They don't have a best line, but they have like three lines. Like Beecher drove play and got a goal on a rebound that was kind of a soft rebound that Ciccolini put in on Saturday. But, you know, that was the thing on the Saturday game is they had 3 to 3.5, maybe even 4 lines at times kind of rolling pretty nicely. And in addition to the defense and the goaltending that they got, their offenses, or at least the chances that they're creating, are dangerous. And, you know, they finished them on Saturday, not as many on Sunday. But, you know, I was looking at this and I said, all right, I think that Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota are all probably top 5-ish teams in the country. And, you know, I mean, if you going 1-1 isn't the worst thing. The problem is you should be mad they gave away that Michigan State game. They gave away a Penn State game early on in the year. Those are the issues. You know, they didn't really show up against Notre Dame at home. And
I don't think I would characterize that series as that. That's like a tight checking.
They got no point.
Yeah, it was a Notre Dame series. Like Notre Dame got the goal first and then they win.
Right.
Like, yeah, but then a month later they play them and they run them off the ice.
Yeah.
And my point is like you can't it's not that, oh, well, we didn't sweep Wisconsin and now we can't win the league. It's like, well, you gave away a lot of stuff earlier in the year and you had to be perfect in your last eight games. And, you know, you lost to a team that has a ton of NHL firepower, like, but you lost by one and you had chances. They had chances to get goals. And, you know, if they played seven times, it'd probably be a great series.
Yeah. And so one thing that kind of leaps out about both Wisconsin and Minnesota is that their best players are a little older. So Caulfield and Holloway are both sophomores and they have a couple of seniors up on their list. And so Michigan's top, I think six scorers are all freshmen. So they're going to lose some of those guys eventually down the road, but some of them are going to come back. And that's when you get like the kind of like performance that's like, okay, this is a Hobie kind of performance. So yeah, Minnesota doesn't have a freshman in their top eight scorers. And this was always going to be a year where you were hoping that they could just immediately dominate, but you know, they are not great on the boards. You know, they are not great at either drawing penalties or preventing some silly ones themselves. And they don't get a lot of support from their upper class guys. So, you know, there's those stats they put up during the game where it's like, yeah, the freshman class has 50% of all the points in this game.
Yeah. I mean, you were talking about Bortolo before, like Bortolo is just starting to come into his own and, you know, Wisconsin, I think Cole Caulfield, ever since he came back from the Canadian juniors, he's scoring, I think, 1.67 goals per game, points per game. And Dylan Holloway, since Holloway came back. But like the two of them together are just, you know, they're just dynamite. And the fact that Michigan was actually skating with those guys, except for a few points where they, you know, they let them loose, like those are two of the best players in the league. And when they're both playing like that, like that was the difference between this series and the Wisconsin series we had at the beginning of the year, was that they didn't have Holloway at that time.
And they're on different lines. So you can't really pinpoint to shut down multiple lines. Like you can kind of configure rotations to go after one line if you want, but when you have Holloway playing the way he is and then Caulfield on the other line, I mean, that's just, everyone's going to have to play well. The one thing I do want to say is that, you know, Michigan's penalty kill has improved so much. Like you look at, I think they had four or five penalty kill opportunities in this weekend, and it took up until the very end for Wisconsin to really do a whole lot. And when they did, they scored and they looked like the 30% score rate that they are, because they do have a bunch of great players on that power play. But leading up to that, you know, they couldn't even they could barely enter the zone on their first three times. And that's not something that Michigan's penalty kill has been doing in the first half of the season. And it started to look a little bit better in the second half. And then now you're facing probably the most dangerous unit. And yeah, you give up a goal, but that's going to happen when you face talented guys. But for the most part on the weekend, I was impressed. I just thought, you know, they took one too many penalties.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at the league, it looks like, okay, Wisconsin and Minnesota are at the top. And then Michigan is, you know, barely above 500. They're just kind of in this mediocre zone. But I just feel like the distribution of their goals, which is fairly random, it conceals the fact that it's really a top three in the Big Ten. It's just that Michigan hasn't gotten the goals in the right games. So like Minnesota's plus 43 goals for, goals against. Minnesota, Wisconsin is like plus 30 something. Michigan's plus 28. And then everybody else in the conference has a negative goal differential. So there is a huge gap from Michigan down to Notre Dame, Penn State, Michigan State, Ohio State. It just doesn't show up in the standings because, you know, they beat Michigan State 8-1 one night and then they give up a couple of late goals. And if you just even those out a little bit, then it looks like then Michigan is really a competitive in this conference, but they're not.
Well, yeah. And, you know, we talked about on the Hockey Cast, Alex and I mentioned about how we're not really sure how pairwise is actually going to factor in. And so College Hockey News runs this Power 16, and Michigan's been in the top eight, if not the top five, for a few weeks now, even through their pause and even going back to the Notre Dame series and the Ohio State series. So, you know, that's where I was thinking, you know, all right, they look like a pretty good team and they played a team that was as hot as anyone is, mostly to a draw. You know, there are some phases that you would have liked them to maybe do a little bit better, but there's not a lot of like areas that you look at with Michigan. You say, okay, this part really concerns me. The defense has gotten a lot better. The penalty kill has gotten a lot better. They're still scoring on the power play at a high 20s rate. I mean, well, they were coming into the weekend anyway. They only had, I think, three or four opportunities total. So, you know, they're playing like a team, and they're getting even strength goals. So they're playing like a team that is capable of going far in the tournament. And, you know, it's sort of like, this is what we wanted to see. The problem is, like I mentioned earlier, you know, they just put themselves in too big of a hole, and they're playing with against two of the top probably five teams, if not three teams in the country in their own conference. So, you know, someone's going to have to finish third, you know.
Well, and this series was a, you know, if you told me the Michigan's going to get a split with Wisconsin this weekend, I'd be like, fine, I'll take it, right? Because, like, that is one of those teams that you were expecting to kind of go toe-to-toe with. I mean, it would have been nice to get two off of them, but, like, that was the Big Ten conference leader going into this weekend. And, like, the games that they missed are Penn State and Michigan State. I think they can make up the Michigan State game because they got a one play coming up at the end of the season. Yeah. And they have a series with Ohio State left. Like, that's not a very good team. So, like, they only have one series at Minnesota, which they really kind of have to worry about the rest of the season. I mean, you can lose to anybody in hockey, but, you know, they hold serve, and they do have a shot at kind of climbing back into the Big Ten standings.
Well, the problem is that Wisconsin hosts Notre Dame and then has no one left. And in Minnesota is kind of the same thing with Michigan. And so there, Minnesota's done with Wisconsin and with Notre Dame. So, I mean, both those teams could, as Alex and I mentioned, be, you know, step on an upturned rake and hit themselves in the face. But
that's what it would take.
It's pretty much going to take them more or less taking a weekend or so off. And, you know, you just watch. I mean, I've seen Minnesota enough. I've seen now Wisconsin, and even Michigan is in that category. You just watch them play, and none of these teams are going to take a huge dive like that. Like, they're just too good at too many levels. And, you know, we didn't even talk about, like, Portillo playing the first game and looking great. And he might have gotten a little lucky on a couple stretches. But, I mean, Alex and I were sitting there before the game started on Sunday, game two, and we were like, it's going to be man tonight, right? And I was like, well, it has to be. And he's like, but if it wasn't, you'd understand, right? And I was like,
yeah, I don't know.
I would. I mean, Portillo's played really well.
He has. I felt like.
And he's not man. He doesn't have the credentials, but it's tough to ask a whole lot more of what he's done.
Sure. So, we think that the Michigan State game is going to get made up easily, and then they just got to find a way to play the Penn State series.
So I've heard some things about Penn State that they might be in some COVID trouble. So I'm not sure what's going to happen. There was a rumor I did hear about how if certain things happen with Penn State, it may actually equalize things out that everybody misses a series. So then, you know, the same number of games ends up being played. But I mean, the person I was talking to was basically like, whatever you can come up with in your mind has just as good a chance of happening as whatever I would tell you.
All right. Well, that's about it. We're going to get out of here. I'll talk to you next week, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm Seth Fisher, along with Brian Cook and David Nasternak. And if you live somewhere where you don't get a lot of snow, now you understand why people from Michigan are so badass.
Teammate, Google that shit. Sean D. Brown Jr.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah.